platform.
Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Hey, folks, this is Dave Gahari, and you're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on SpeakFreeRadio.com. It is 6.02 p.m. Central Time, Sunday, May 19. I say it all the time. I'll say it again. Where does it go, right? I mean, it's getting we're getting into the end of May, so I don't get it. Anyway, it's been a great year, great time. Shout out to Bobby in Pensacola. Great guy, great supporter of Money Tree Publishing, and more important, the white race, which is something we focus on here on the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, and many folks do, many hosts do on SpeakFreeRadio.com. Let's just talk about SpeakFreeRadio.com a little bit before we continue, all right? We've been having some issues lately, some technical issues, which we're trying to iron out. Don't know what they are, but behind the scenes, we're working feverishly to correct them. So, I mean, the sound comes out okay. Sometimes it's interrupted, which we're trying to figure out why, and sometimes the sound isn't perfect as we would want it. All the time. And as you probably are aware, the sound is perfect and the quality is high. But who knows if we're being messed with or if there's some other innocuous reason why this is happening. We're trying to figure that out. Anyway, this is a Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And thank you, Nick. And we air every Sunday. I think we've only missed one broadcast. And that was because I had to go up to Alabama and take care of some personal stuff. And otherwise, we've done basically every show since we started. Let me just see where we are here. What episode this is? So we're in the 80s now. This is episode 82. And I think there were a few technical issues where a show didn't record. It's out in the ether, never to be heard again, probably, unless somebody personally recorded it. But this is show 82, so we've been going for over a year and a half, which is pretty cool. So the purpose of the show is to highlight Dr. David Duke, who is somebody who has been fighting for the white race for about 60 years. It might be a little bit over 60 years. Dave is going to be 74 this July. So he started, I think he said, when he was 14. He recognized this when he was 14. So let's say 60 years. Almost 60 years or around 60 years he's been involved in this fight. It's crazy when you think about it. And a lot of folks, I've been involved for 25 years in the fight in general. I wasn't awoken to some of the more important aspects of the fight probably about a little less than 20 years ago. But most of you folks, same thing. There was something that got you going. And that's what we're here to do. We are here to talk about that stuff. And Dave is here to answer your questions. Dave's not here yet, but we'll go over some things, mainly the way the show works is that you can call in from anywhere. You go to We don't have a call-in number yet. We're working on that as well. But you can go to speakfreeradio.com, click on the call-in chat tab, and then you'll see a bunch of the shows there. Those are the original programming active shows. And you can click on the associated icon of the show. In this case, the Dave and Duke call-in show, for some reason, is to the far left. I thought that it would actually change, so when a new show is added, it'll be bumped to the right, but apparently it doesn't. So you click on the Dave and Duke call-in show, and that'll bring you into the waiting room, into the studio, as some of you are already in there now. And then, when the time is right, we'll bring you in, and I'll bring you in, and then we can, or you can ask your question or make a comment for the great Dr. David Duke. And then he will answer that question or comment on the comment. And he has 2 minutes to do it. Now, this is if we're not backed up, or if we are backed up, that 2 minutes we try to keep firm with because we want to get all the callers in. So a little bit before that 2 minutes runs out, you'll hear this sound. It used to be this. But he wanted that changed. And I would want to do a different sound, but I'm not going to do it. But at any rate, on the 2 minutes again, you'll hear that sound. And then I'm going to, you know, move along. Dave, we got to go. We got more callers. So that's how it goes. And if we don't have a bunch of callers at any time throughout the program, then we can extend that 2 minutes. Or if it's a topic that might deserve more attention, then we can do that as well, extend it as well. And as always, the ongoing challenge to this show, in other words, to get us off the air, is that if anyone can let us know of a more significant threat to humanity and free speech other than organized international Jewry, let us know and we will quit. And alongside that, if anyone can let us know of a more effective deliverer of that message, then let us know, and we'll quit as well. And so we've had this challenge, I think, from, you know, really from the beginning of the show. And I think it was, Dave, did we have that challenge from the beginning of the show? I think Dave might be having some technical issues because I brought him in, but I don't hear him or see him, so he might be. Let me type a message. Are you having some tech issues? And yeah, he's not. It doesn't look right. And there's the possibility that, you know, his system is being attacked. Ours has been attacked. I have been attacked. There he is. So he's asking if there are problems. No, on your end. And I'm going to remove him from here. And maybe he can come back in. Let me tell him to restart. Then come back in. Okay. And let's see what he does. Okay, so he dropped out. Good. You know, before we get Dave back, there was a news article put out by the Washington, I guess some people call it the Washington Compost, Yeah, see, Dave is there, but let's see if he's going to... No, see, it's doing that same thing. Yeah, it's just... he's not coming in normal. Okay, restart. And... So let's go to this Washington Post. Business Titans. it's funny, you know. Business Titans privately urged NYC mayor to use police on Columbia protesters. And that's Columbia, the university, college. Protesters. Chats show. So Dave's restarting. He said, okay. So that's an article in the Washington Compost, right? And here's an article. It's posted on Renegade Tribune, right? Which is a very good site, run by a colleague of mine, Kyle Hunt, great guy. So here's this. Let's just go over this article while Dave is trying to square things away. All right. Of course, the Washington Compost you can't get into because there's a paywall, but, you know, there's ways around it, of course. A WhatsApp chat started by some wealthy Americans. We're going to find out about those Americans. After the October 7 Hamas attack reveals their focus on Mayor Eric Adams and their work to shape U.S. opinion of the Gaza war. Of course, it's not a war. Looks like it was written by two Jews, Hannah Natanson and Emmanuel Felton. Okay, so let's see where if Dave came back in yet. He didn't. Okay. So, look, there's nothing wrong with influencing public opinion, right? Not at all. It can be done. But it's usually always these people. And, of course, as soon as you point that out, they're denying it. A group of billionaires and business titans working to shape U.S. public opinion of the war in Gaza. It's not a war, of course. Privately pressed. Of course, these wealthy billionaire Jews, these titans, have the power to privately press the New York City mayor last month to send police to disperse pro-Palestinian protests at Columbia University, according to communications obtained by the Washington Post and people familiar with the group. So what this means is that these rich Jews, see, that's what they should have said in the article, rich Jews step on United States First Amendment. Business executives, including Kind, with a capital K, Kind snack company founder Daniel Lubetsky, hedge fund manager Daniel Loeb, billionaire Len Blavatnik, and real estate investor Joseph Sitt, with two T's, held a Zoom video call on April 26 with Mayor Eric Adams, Democrat, about a week after the mayor first sent New York police to Columbia's campus, a log of chat messages shows. During the call, some attendees discussed making political donations to Adams, as well as how the chat group's members could pressure Columbia's president and trustees to permit the mayor to send police to the campus to handle protesters, according to chat messages summarizing the conversation. So Dave's back. Good. We're going to get him back. again. So the upshot of it is, and we'll talk about this perhaps if somebody has a question about it or wants to comment on it. The upshot of this is that they're all Jews, and if you or me wanted to have a private conversation with the mayor of, you know, the largest city in the country, I don't think that would happen. But they're Jews, and that's why they make donations to these politicians. That's why they own them, and it's incredible. Dave, can you hear me?
I sure can. Yes.
All right. The restart did it.
It did it, but I don't know what went wrong, but we're here now.
Okay, good. Did you see that article, Dave,
about the Washington? Yeah, I saw a lot of other articles, too, since last week. I mean, they're just crazy when you start to think about things. So did you see the Fox News story? In fact, this has been said in a few sources. The Fox News stories were one of the congressmen filed a bill with a few other GOP congressmen to have anyone who is demonstrating on campuses, basically against the genocide going on against the Gazans and the Palestinians on behalf of the Jews, the Jewish genocide of Palestinians, anybody that was doing that was going to be sent to Gaza. Did you hear that?
You know, it's just hilarious that they, how could they dare deny that they have all the power?
Well, yeah. You think about this. I mean, talk about, there's something in the Constitution called freedom of speech, Article 1. You know?
Well, no, there's an asterisk next to it.
That's right.
It's a Hebrew asterisk.
Not only for Jews.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we say FTJ, right? I mean, that's why you get to the point where these son of a bitches are doing.
Let me read you this story because it's so shocking. And there's no pushback on Fox, and they were discussing it. And there's been no pushback about this at all.
Fox is pure Jew. You know that, Dave.
Oh yeah, Fox is.
They are taking the position of,
total,
you know, it's a joke.
Total
yeah, it's
genocide.
A joke.
But
joke.
Here's the title. Here's the headline. College anti-Israel agitators, I mean free speech advocates, right? And by the way, there's always been free speech on campuses, and these people are not being violent. It's really kind of amazing. They don't even talk about why they're demonstrating, because these Jews are committing one of the worst human rights crimes, mass murder of men, women, and children in Gaza with our tax money, which we shouldn't be sending them to begin with. Of course, they murdered our people too, right, on the Liberty ship. They murdered our people they tried to murder our people in the Levant affair when they attacked American installations and blamed it on the Egyptians to get us in a war which killed how many? They murdered a few of our top agents against the Soviets with the Jonathan Pollard Sky Affair, our spy affair, where they bartered our data to the Soviets for getting more Jews out of Russia, out of the Soviet Union.
They've hurt us badly.
They've been hurting us for years. And you know what? They lied us into, and they were the ones behind the Iraq war based on lies, which got about 30,000 Americans wounded or murdered. In fact, according to the Pentagon, there's 400,000 Americans with brain injuries. It caused millions of families to be broken up, and it cost us $3 trillion. And it's probably going to cost us more, $3 trillion. Now, if you just take the aid to Israel, you're talking about literally over $1 million now. It was about 400,000. 10, 15 years ago, but they've given so much and all these extra weapons and everything. It's about $1 million. But if you count in the wars, you can remember back, you're old enough, Dave, to remember back the oil embargo in the 70s.
I remember that time. I was there. Yep, I do.
Yeah, well, sure. And in 1970.
Did I sound old enough?
Yeah, that was because.
73, Yom Kippur War.
They were protesting. You know, our money and bombs and weapons going to, you know, kill the Palestinians and wipe them out. And by the way, folks, I've got to remind you all for a quick moment, anybody out there who is what's called a white nationalist, or you just want to defend the rights of white people to live in Europe in America, in our countries, and exist and not be outnumbered and outvoted and not have a government that works directly for our ethnic cleansing in our country. They're doing to the Palestinians exactly what they're doing to us, except the difference is it's a more quicker mass murder type of thing. But, you know, a lot of us are getting murdered. We have more than 500,000 white people more who are hurt by black criminals violently. That's according to the Justice Department figures under a Jewish, by the way, head of the Justice Department, Merrick, who's criminalizing Americans for protesting in the Capitol.
Garfinkel, right, Dave?
Yeah, Garfinkel, something like that.
It's not Garland, right?
No.
It's not like a wreath of garland on a Christmas tree.
Yeah,
it's Garfinkel. It's Jew.
Yeah, okay. It's like, it's just absolutely amazing. Let me just read this. It says agitators could be sent to Gaza under new House bill. And then it has what he said underneath. And they're just kind of like promoting this right on the Fox News channel. This is, quote, and this is the, quoting Randy Weber, one of the people sponsoring this. I am going to bet that those pro-Hamas supporters, anti-genocide supporters, right, wouldn't last a day. Ah, but let's give them the opportunity, says Randy Weaver. So he's saying to arrest people who are demonstrating against this genocide and the free speech on their own campuses, by the way. They're not outsiders. In fact, the campus voted, listen to this, they voted 70% to defund Israel from the campus money. They voted over 65% on other aspects. So they're overwhelmingly for this. And they're much more for this anti-Israel action and this anti-genocide action than they were even against the Vietnam War in terms of the numbers on campuses. They didn't have anywhere near the support from the general campus populations as they do on this thing. Because it's so obvious to everybody what the Jews are doing in this case. And by the way, it is Jews who are committing this mass murder. But you can't say it's Jews committing genocide. You can't say it's Jewish tyranny or Jewish supremacy or Jewish racism in Israel. You can't say, you know, it's Jewish torture going on in the prisons against these Palestinians, both Christians and Muslims, by the way. No, you can't say it's Jews. But in Israel, they don't call each other Israelis. They call themselves Jews. They even got it in their passport. I mean, they demand that we all say it's the Jewish state, and they literally stated in a new law passed by Knesset a couple of years ago, but they've had these kind of things already. They passed another new law that only Jews can have self-determination in Israel. Nobody else can have that. Nobody else can determine themselves or any sort of reference to themselves. This is what's going on. Let's see. It goes. It's just amazing what's going on here, and this is the kind of stuff that is so insane. And I also have another little tape here from.
All right, then we'll get to the calls, Dave. They're filled up.
I have a short tape from our wonderful. I think he's kind of a very gay or very happy person in the Senate. I think his name is Graham, Lindsey Graham. But he literally went on Meet the Press, the biggest newscast in America. I've been on three times myself years ago. Of course, I can't get on there anymore because they can't afford my voice out there. But
no.
He gets on Meet the Press, and he said, well, we bombed Nagasaki and Hiroshima, didn't we? You know? We, you know, if Israel wants to drop atomic bombs on them, I say, great, go ahead. You know, I think it's okay.
What a little queer douche that guy is.
Advocating dropping atomic bombs on Gaza, yeah. a size of area like the LA airport, right? And there's 2.4 million people. Half of them are children. And with women and children combined, you're talking about 75% of the population. He's going to murder all these innocents. And it's really amazing that they get away with it. But not only does he say these things, which is horrendous. I mean, there was no pushback at all on Meet the Press by anybody, by the host of it. She just started to change the subject.
Of course not.
She didn't say, my God, you realize what you're advocating. You're advocating killing a couple million civilians who are innocent of any crime. I mean, you're for dropping them out.
Dave, it's political theater.
And you're going to open the Pandora's
box. It's a joke.
You're going to drop atomic bombs. You're going to break that taboo, right? And, I mean, and then he doubled down on it. But she didn't even say that.
They're not there to present any type of ballot. No. All right, Dave, let's get to the callers.
Let me tell you.
Anything.
Amazing because you can't even imagine. You know what it's like? And by the way, this law, Dr. Slattery said it on my show yesterday. And he said it on a show we just taped this morning. But he said, imagine the Jews. Imagine if we tried to make a law during the alleged Holocaust. And by the way, our government said there wasn't a Holocaust during the Holocaust, by the way. But what did they know? We don't know now, right? But anyway, but imagine if some people in Congress said, any Jews that protested against the Nazis putting them in Auschwitz, we're going to send those people who protested that, Americans, we're going to send them to Auschwitz. Huh? Can you imagine?
Dave, you can't make this stuff up. All right, let's get to the calls, buddy. Yeah. They're piling up here.
Okay,
first caller, what's your first name and where are you calling from?
Hello, guys. How's it going? Richard here.
He comes in, he says, caller number one, because he's like, I can't trick Harry. I'm going to come in as caller number one. No image on there. All right, big deal, Richard. All right?
Well, I really appreciate it. I wanted to congratulate Dr. Duke on his appearance on Politically Provoked. I saw that in the week. I really did appreciate that.
I don't think you could have got through the whole thing. That was 5 hours.
I did. No, it was 6 hours, Dr. Duke. Yeah. I know that you said that it was only like 10 p.m. or something, but no, you were there a long time, and I appreciated that.
When I'm just motoring along with my...
No, that must have been the host. What is that program, Richard? Tell the listeners.
Oh, it's Politically Provoked. I think it was... I saw it on Odyssey, but I'm sure they're active on other...
Who is it? Who's the host?
I think Mio was the host that was most interacting with Dave. And there was also a woman called... I think Brittany was her name. I don't know the background of her. I think the long ongoing joke is that she either is part Jewish or something, and there was intention there, but you know, Dr. Duke didn't really care about that, in the sense that it's more about getting the message out there.
And
you can be part Jewish yourself, but go ahead.
I don't know if I'm muted right now or not, but I'd be happy to go on any show with any Jew.
No, you haven't been muted, Dave. You want me to mute you? Hold on, I'll mute you.
No, I don't want you to mute.
Oh, you don't? Okay, all right.
Okay, so I would be happy to go on the show with any Jew or anybody that would let me get to the public. They have a good audience. And the co-host is a guy who's, he's a good Christian, and he's very well, well learned. And we had an incredible discussion in those. So you did enjoy the show.
I did, and I enjoyed it as well, because it was very late this time over in Britain. It was around about, I think, 7 p.m. by the time, 7 a.m. So it was the next day over. But I wanted to. It was great interaction. There was a lot of good audience feedback, and there were people messaging with their super chats about it was good to get the reach out there, and I congratulate you for it, Dr. Duke. It brings me to my question, actually, which is that, moving aside from social media, there was a caller that came in, I think was it last show, Andre, talking about the distinction between the virtual world, which is, I guess, where we are now, speaking online, having this call-in show, and doing real world action. And what kind of real world action, meeting IRL in real life, do you think will need to take place in the future?
He was talking about
Charlottesville. I was thinking more about the banner drops, which they're doing in Patriotic Alternative in the UK. What kind of things do you think will need to come about in IRL action, as it were? That's my question. Thank you very much.
Well, I think we need a lot more of these demonstrations. And I have to salute those college kids, whoever they are, whether they're white, black, whatever they are. Because this is something I keep trying to stress to our people. All right. We all are here And we white people who are fighting, we're fighting, yes, for our own people and our own survival. And that's the most natural thing for any people to ever do, any community, any heritage, in their own country. There's every race, every tribe, every people who have a cohesive tradition, a common heritage, common language, religious values, history, and love for each other. Just like, in fact, people in a town root for their football team. It's even more natural. It's even more natural.
Dave, maybe silence that phone.
Well, I'm glad they called, okay, because now that they know that the show is on.
Was it Slattery?
Today reminded me, but they forgot to watch the show.
Was it Slattery?
No, it wasn't Slattery. So okay, anyway, right. Where was I? So
just checking. You were lauding the young people who are protesting.
Yeah, but no, I was on another subject. What did I say? But when
you're talking about how it's natural, it was natural for you to.
Yes, it's
look
all. It's
range,
obviously natural.
And it's something
people
that we need to focus on in terms of welcoming others.
Exactly, exactly. And the truth is that white people and Europeans are compassionate about human life. There's no people on earth that do more charity around the world than white people. There's no people on earth that work more for human rights. Yes, there was slavery for a while in America. There was slavery for a while in some European lands. But there was also slavery. I mean, the Aztecs, you to sacrifice thousands and thousands of people every month or so. It was amazing. In fact, there was a lot of research on that done in the last few weeks. And they were digging up and they were proving thousands and thousands of human sacrifices, along with cannibalism in the Aztec kingdom. And I'm not saying that it was okay then for us to conquer the Aztecs. But what I'm saying is that, there's lots of things said against Europeans. But the interesting thing is that European white people on their own ended slavery. It was not other countries ending slavery. The truth is that Asian nations, Genghis Khan practiced slavery, Attila the Hun practiced slavery. And I've seen Muslims unfairly, but of course they're being conditioned and they're being weaponized against white people by Jews, ironically, even though it was the replacement of white people in America, in the elite of America, that caused the problems that Muslims are facing. Yeah, we did have some wars between us. We obviously had the Crusades. And those, by the way, those Crusades were launched after the biggest invasions, which were the Islamic invasions, for instance, the Ottomans into Europe, after the, and worse, before that, the Moorish invasions and the invasions of Sicily. We can just keep going on and on and on. And we had many Asiatic invasions of America. We had the Crusaders, the Moroccans and North Africans raid the coastlines and steal mainly our women and kids because they were the most valuable. That's where they get the most money for. It's like having a permanent prostitute, basically, which they could sell out if they want to. And the people that ran the slave trade, by the way, in North Africa were not actually Muslims. They were actually Jews. And that was talked about in some of the histories of that stuff. Jews have always dominated the slave trade. But what I'm trying to say here, and the important thing to understand here, is that Europeans freed, like the British, they banned slavery on their own. And not only that, they decided to spend their money, put their sailors at risk, and costing a lot of money from taxpayers for the British Isles to stop slave ships.
Dave, the question was about real-life activism.
Well, I know.
Real-life activism. That's what he was asking about. I know, but we got callers
on that. But it's as important. This is about real-life activism. Because I'm answering it by saying that we need real life activism from our people. And if you're white and you want to get people sympathetic to the survival of our people, all right, then when you demonstrate that you are not trying to enslave the world like the Jews try to say we are, when you demonstrate solidarity with the Palestinians, when you show them that not only are the Jews hurting the people of Palestine and causing these wars that killed millions of people, they've also killed our people. We have to get this clear. We have to let those white people know what's going on against the Palestinians is horrible and terrible. But they killed a lot more Europeans by the First World War, which they had a lot to do with. The Balfour Declaration, which was done by Jews.
All right, Dave, we got to get to the next caller.
So we need Dave, all this next activism, caller. And we need to show our people, you know, that we're consistent. Yes, we have a right to preserve white people. And
all right, we'll get you back in, Richard.
Demonstrate that because we believe in human rights for everybody on earth, and the Jews are not just a threat to us; they're a threat to everybody on this planet. That's the point.
Exactly.
That's what real life activism means, and that's
right.
How we're going to be most effective.
Cool. There. All right, Jimmy, how are you, brother?
Yeah, I did get around to answering the question.
Hey guys, yeah, Dave, good.
Hey,
Dr. Duke. Hey, I'm good. You know.
The
I remember when Dr. Duke talking about they outlawed Zionism in Russia, and I was thinking, man, in the end, it seems like that would be a nice solution to just outright outlaw, you know, everything Judaism, you know, someday. Oh, yeah, making the cricket
noise.
Someone
was a dedicated Zionist, dedicated to the state of Israel, and we're definitely against Russia. And the Russian people, and the Russian church, and the Russian people, that they were traitors. They could even face the death penalty because they believed that was treason. And so that's how strong. That's why Jews hate Russia so much. And by the way, I said something earlier that I wanted to back up with you for a second. You know, I watched a program just this morning with Jeffrey Sachs, and he's one Jew I really do admire. Alvarez's whole career, he actually helped some of the Jewish oligarchs, you know, buy up Russia. But then he's kind of had a change in heart. And he's really been one of the biggest critics of Israel and biggest critics of these neocons, right? So, and it's really great to point out people like him. He's famous Jews. He's a Columbian professor. He totally supports the demonstrations. He totally supports the evil, or exposing the evil of the so-called neoconservatives. He wrote an article, a few months after the war started in Ukraine, and the name of the article is "Ukraine is the Latest Neocon Disaster." Now, he talked about the neoconservatives, and everybody he named were Jews. He said the war in Ukraine is the culmination of a 30-year project by the American neoconservative movement, neocon movement. Biden administration is packed with the same neocons who championed the U.S. wars of choice in Serbia, that was against our fellow Europeans, by the way, in favor of the radical Muslims, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, and it did so much to provoke Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The neocon track record is one of unmitigated disaster, yet Biden has staffed his team with neocons. Well, he didn't even staff his team. He doesn't even know who his wife is. His team was staffed by his chief of staff, who was Ron Klain, and then Mr. Zintz, who was also our COVID czar. Nice coincidence, right? And as a result, Biden's steering Ukraine, the U.S. and European Union towards yet another geopolitical debacle. Now, let me give you a paragraph, because I love to quote Jews showing how everything we say here in this program, on my program, on Rents every morning, I'll be on there tomorrow at 10 a.m. Central Time. He says, the neocon movement emerged in the 1970s around a group of public intellectuals, several of whom were influenced by University of Chicago political scientist Leo Strauss, Jewish, by the way, and Yale University classicist Donald Kagan, Jewish, big Jewish hater. Neocon leaders included Norman Podoretz, Irving Kristol, Paul Wolfowitz, Robert Kagan, son of Donald, Frederick Kagan, son of Donald, Victoria Nuland, wife of Robert, Elliot Abrams, and Kimberly Allen Kagan, wife of Frederick. Now, all these Jews hated Russia with a passion because they said Russians were anti-Semitic. Every single person he's talking about that are Jews. He goes on to say, this approach was spelled out first by Paul Wolfowitz in the Draft Defense Policy Guidelines. It was also by Richard Perle, which they say the two orchestrators of the Iraq War, which are totally based on lies, sending our American boys in harm's way to be blinded or emasculated or murdered are maimed or having brain damage by the hundreds of thousands in the Iraq war based on lies. I mean, it's just amazing. And he goes on. Robert Kagan spelled out the neocon case for NATO enlargement. He points out how Russia didn't do the expansion. It was the other way around. He says Kagan penned the article Price of Private Citizen while his wife, Victoria Nuland, by the way, her real name was Noodleman, was the U.S. ambassador to NATO under George Bush. Nuland has been the neocon operative par excellence. Now, what's the result of this war that's raging right now? It looks like there's over half a million, at least half a million dead, maybe 600,000 on both sides, mainly Ukrainians. A whole generation's been destroyed. The country's being destroyed. It didn't have to be destroyed. You and I, both of us on this program, when we first started this show, said this is going to result in hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian dead young men, young Christians, and a number of Russians. This was started by the Jews. This is mass murder. This is a mass genocide. This is the worst genocide in Ukraine, one of the worst genocides in the world. And it's even bigger right now than the one in Gaza, really, than since the Holodomor in the 1930s when Tsar, Zhuganovich led, he was head of the Communist Party in Ukraine and then later directed the starvation that literally starved to death 11 million Ukrainians, and at least 50%, it was actually more like about 70% of the dead Ukrainian children. They never even had a chance of life or development. And then many more millions were stunted. They didn't have full brain development or body development, because that's what happens when you starve a kid when it's developing. It's a lifelong sentence. And this is what Jews do. But it's really interesting. Here's a Jew saying exactly what I said. Of course, Haaretz magazine did a big article about it, talking about they kind of sarcastically called it the white man's burden, symbolizing that white men were the ones that had to pay the price for the war. So it's us that had to pay the $5 trillion this war cost, not the Jews. It was whites who had to pay at least $3 or $4 trillion in extra higher taxes and higher monies for gas and oil. If you're in the 1970s, so many people went bankrupt. We basically had a depression in this country. People couldn't even afford to drive their cars or trucks to work because of the fact that we had a policy in Israel, which was a wrong policy, but caused the oil embargo, which so hurt America. You just can't, make this stuff up, The stuff that they do. And he also talks about the fact that America overthrew the legally elected government of Ukraine. And he didn't mention this fact, but the truth is that the first mass murder in Ukraine had nothing to do with the Russians. In fact, the Russians still haven't killed as many Ukrainians as the government of Kyiv, the Jewish government of Ukraine did, and the American government sponsored all this and promoted all this. They killed 16,000. In eastern Ukraine. They bombed villages and villages and villages, tried to terrorize them because they dared to support the same thing America supported in our Declaration of
Independence. Dave, we're going to get to the next caller.
We'll
Jimmy, thanks, buddy. We'll get you back in.
David Duke never been wrong yet.
No, he hasn't. That's why they don't allow him on.
All right.
Let's bring
in. It's great to see a Jew saying everything we say, but if we're called anti-Semitic.
Right, we're Jew haters. Goose, what's the good news, buddy?
Hey, guys, how's it going, Dr. Duke? How are you? How you been feeling?
Well, I got a little congestion, but other than that, I'm doing great.
Good, man. That's good to hear. I love the show. Love listening to you guys. I missed last week. I was like, oh, man, this sucks. They're not on this week. But, I just wanted to comment, I wanted to sing just two little verses. Jews on the left, Jews on the right, and the goyim stuck in the middle again. That's how I feel.
Stuck in the middle again. That's right.
Yeah, a colleague of mine who Dave knows, he says that the Jews are on both sides of the political parties, and the goyim are just spectators. And that's
100%. 100%.
It didn't smell as poor as preppy. It's not them that are dying, right? It's us that are dying.
I'm out watering my crops, but yeah, you've got these preppies, you know, posing as you know, whites, when like 90% of them are Jewish. You know, it's just it's all just so fake and gay, to be blunt.
But I love to expose them, and it is a great joy in life to get the truth out to people. And yep. The truth I've been really harping on every day, and we'll do it a lot during the show, probably repeatedly in different areas of the struggle, right? In fact, Sachs this morning, in the interview I saw them, he called it, you know, the hegemon. You know, hegemony, obviously, is hegemony or hegemony is actually, you know, the power of one group over another. In fact, I've even got some of the, I looked up some dictionary definitions so that we understand it exactly. So if you look this up here, that is a hegemon. This is AI, a powerful entity such as a country leader or group that has authority or influence over others. The word suggests dominance and often more power than others may prefer. Of course, yeah. For example, the United States is considered a hegemon. But the real hegemon is not the United States. Yes, the hegemon is a hegemon, but it's like a control hegemon. It's what the Jews used to call what the Jewish rabbis would call this mythical Jewish monster called the golem. And the mythical Jewish monster, which they're supposed to conjure up, because, by the way, Judaism is full of black magic. People don't know that. It's so satanic in so many ways, right?
Yeah, it's Kabbalah butt magic.
Exactly. And the
that's really what it is. It's anal butt magic.
Oh, God.
It's disgusting.
I don't want to think about it. But the term hegemon comes from the ancient Greek word, you know, hegemon, which means a leader, god, or commander. The related term comes from the Greek word hegemonia, which means dominance over. And, of course, they do have dominance. Now, this is the point that I've been making every day in my programs, and I think I'm articulating it as clearly and powerfully as I've ever articulated it in my life.
You're doing great, Dave.
And that is, we have, this is what we have to understand. I'll just sum it up in very simple summary, right? Jewish supremacy, Jewish hegemony, is the most persistent, radical, intolerant, murderous, repressive, hateful, racist ideology in all of human history. Now, National Socialist Germany is often portrayed by the political, media, and academic Jewish establishment. Of course, the enemies of what Germany was, who people advocated for the war, a war that killed 75 million Europeans, by the way, as I believe the right figure, whether it's 60 or 75 million or 80 million, whatever it is. This was a tragedy, and it was a war that could have been avoided, and it was fought over very minor circumstances that could have been solved through diplomacy. It was just about preventing Germans from exercising their right of self-determination, where they were separated and held in bondage, in effect, by a country that hated them. We were doing programs against them. Now, I'm not hateful toward the Poles at all. I think all Europeans should unite and not fight each other. But it was not this war, the few thousand that died in the very beginning of this war. We could have avoided a world war where 70 million people or more, innocent people, died of all types. Now, ironically, a thorough study of National Socialist ideology, whether by the national socialist philosophers themselves, such as Alfred Rosenberg was one of those people, he's actually a German name, that's not a Jew actually, and the most revered academic philosopher and the most famous supporter of National Socialist Germany was Martin Heidegger. He was considered one of the greatest, or maybe the greatest, modern time philosopher in the world, Martin Heidegger, who is an existentialist. Or even Adolf Hitler. All right. If you look at the words of Adolf Hitler and how he describes Jews, he never called ever in his book to the killing Jews. In fact, the classic statement he made in Mein Kampf was walking in the streets of Vienna. He said he sees these Jews and they get these earlocks and, you know, they're they're dirty. Half of them are, by then, those times, they were mostly communists and kind of, yeah. And they were involved.
Is this a German in front of me, right?
Yes,
right?
It's a German. And yeah. The Jews every day essentially argue, is this a goy? Yeah. Is this human? The Encyclopedia Britannica, but even more important, the Jewish Encyclopedia, which was written by the leading Jewish organizations in the world, both secular and religious, the most famous. It's, you can get it everywhere on the internet, and you can actually search it. Anybody can prove what I'm saying here. They say stuff like the best of the goy and the best of Gentiles should be killed. You got major Jewish organizations saying this. You got the head rabbi. And by the way, this is Judaism too. So don't believe it and understand they're lying to you when they tell you that, you know, that Judaism is universalistic religion, basically preaching love for everybody, love thy neighbor. It's not that. In fact,
yeah,
I just read an article by an interesting individual. I think going back to Sachs again today, and he was talking about the encyclical released by the Pope the other day, and he pointed out that the famous story in the New Testament, which shows you exactly what Christ was teaching as compared to the Jews, and why Jesus Christ was preaching the fulfillment of God's work to make sure people on the earth understood this, that he didn't go along with the Jewish racism and supremacism and hatred. And a good example of that is that Christ himself used the example, you've all heard this, I think, before, and he talked about the Good Samaritan. Now, even though Jews hated Samaritans, and there was a very strict Jewish law that you can't drink after them. And by the way, Christ drank at a Samaritan well with a Samaritan woman, which was a violation of all Jewish law. He also told Jews that they didn't have to obey the Sabbath. You're sorry to do some work on the Sabbath if you're offended. You know, the entirety of the New Testament is opposing the laws, the old halakhic laws of the Jews. And if you look at it, it actually says, in the New Testament, by the apostles, say the summary of the message of Jesus Christ compared to what they call the Torah was, the message of Jesus Christ was that the golden rule, treat others the way you would want them to treat you. This is the summarization of Jesus' teachings, that we got to treat everybody fairly. And they were talking about, and in fact, he humbled the Jews, and he tried to make them feel bad about their policies because they hated Samaritans. And he pointed out a story where there was a Samaritan, there was a Jew who was attacked by robbers, probably other fellow Jewish robbers, and the Samaritan, who they hated so much, he took up the man, he nursed his wounds, he took him to an inn, you know, nursed him back to health, got him a doctor, all these things, right? And, of course, Jewish philosophy, the Jewish Talmud, says a Jew should not even save the life of a Gentile. But he pointed out the Samaritans, who they so hate and they so defame, that he actually tried to help a Jew, even though he knew that Jews hated him and his people. And that's basically the difference between Jews and Goyim. They are the most, they look at the entirety of humanity, which is 99.8% of mankind. They look at the entirety of humanity as evil and not even people. And yes, they say in the Talmud and in the Jewish Encyclopedia, which has clarity on the Talmud, it says they have a whole section. And when I was a kid, this is the first time I read Encyclopedia, let me tell you. And it was very easy to get a good sense of what Jews believed because it was very clear. I guess this was for young Jews too and old Jews to make sure they understand how terrible Gentiles were. Anyway, so under Gentiles, they have a whole section in the Jewish Encyclopedia called Gentiles. And in that section, it says specifically, only Jews are men. Now, this was before women's liberation. This was before feminism. This is before that they considered if you say men, then you're dissing women. You know, our mankind. Mankind is not even proper to say anymore. So, but they said only Jews are men. Well, Jews were also the most feminist and racist of all. unlike the Christian church, where the women could sit next to the men in church with their families and children and everything else, in the Jewish synagogues, women were required to go to the back. I mean, women, Jewish women, and that's one reason why the feminist movement so hated men, and it was all led by Jewish women, because they were experiencing the real misogyny. It's the misogyny. Look at the worst violators of women, the raping these women, misusing women, the casting couch, the famous Hollywood casting couch. You know, the we got a Jew right now in prison, right, for raping all those girls in California. We got a Jew. And this is the same Jew that made all those movies supporting torture, for instance, in that movie Inglourious Basterds. You know, and so, I mean, it's like, it's like this is the thing that we're not supposed to be able to discuss today. So the ultimate racist supremacist movement in the history of the world was Judaism. It's all about genealogy. It's all about Jewish superiority. It even goes to the extent, all right, it's the ultimate supremacism. If you say that you are that you're the chosen of God, God favors you over all other people. That's about the most racist you could ever get. Everybody else is second class, and God cares about you more than any other people. Jesus came forward, and Jesus set the record straight. He corrected these Jews. He corrected the direction that Judaism went in, and he said, no. The summary, in fact, of the Gospels, which is written clearly in the New Testament, the summary is that Jesus made the golden rule. You treat others the way you want to be treated by others. That he made that the rule of his covenant with God. Not the Jewish rule of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth and all this racial hatred and supremacy. And he didn't say that you couldn't be a Jew. He didn't say you couldn't. Well, he didn't say you actually did, because he said you got to accept Christ. That's the way now. We've got a new covenant going. And the old covenant doesn't exist anymore. But he didn't try to say we should kill everybody. There's no genocide in the New Testament.
Dave, Goose had a question. Go ahead, Goose.
No, I was just going to comment. They did kill the best. You know, the Wehrmacht, between the Wehrmacht and the U.S., my grandfather, unfortunately, was forced to fight his family in Germany, his cousins. And this was the last good, high testosterone, generation on both sides. I agree 100%.
They did, and they love these wars. And that's exactly what the Talmud says. The best of the Gentiles must be killed. And they even go to lengths to explain it. In fact, they explain it in the Jewish Encyclopedia. You can look it up, by the way. Just look up the best of the Gentiles. Look up Gentiles in the Jewish Encyclopedia. It was done like in 1912 or whatever. You can find it online on the internet. And just
Dave, why don't you dig that up while I take the top of the hour break?
Yeah. Hey, thank you guys. And also, I just wanted to say real quick, Dave, we need to do a pro documentary on Dr.
Hey, Goose, hang out, buddy. I got to take the top of the hour break. Hang on.
All right.
Okay, folks, this is Dave Gahary. You're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. It is 7:00 Central Time. And we are on speakfreeradio.com. We were just notified that the mobile part of Speak Free Radio, where you listen on your cell phone, is not functioning properly. So we're taking a look at that, and we've been having some issues. Dave, it's muted. I'm giving the top of the hour break. Hold on a second. Everybody, hold on. So please take a look at that. It should be fixed, hopefully by tomorrow. And now we're, in the second hour and we're getting back. And Goose, you were saying to Dave that you think we should have something. So go ahead.
I don't understand why the website wouldn't come up though. I mean, it could be they're having problem in their reception in their particular area, but it seems odd because if you can get access.
What website, Dave?
Your website, Speak Free Radio website. Because they should be able to access it from any cell phone. The same.
No, that's up fine.
Well, I know what I'm saying is, my opinion would be, or what I would
think, I don't know.
I'm not saying that I know what's happening here. I'm just saying that I'm suggesting that if you can access the website, it's not going to affect it whether you're on, say, let's say Apple, or whether you're on their browsers, or whether you're on Bravo, or whether you're on any of these others, Google, or DuckDuckGo, or anything, or whatever you want to do, or on, you know,
Opera, or all.
Right. It should be playing.
I don't know what the problem is.
It seems like it could be the problem of that particular provider for those.
Okay. Yeah, guys.
Yeah.
I was having problems, yes. And I logged off and re-logged back in, and it was fine. So just do that.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, it's working now. Goose, go ahead. You're saying something about we need to have some sort of an event.
No, I just think David Duke, you know, if it's whether you produce it or I think we need to do a documentary, a pro David Duke documentary on his life and on his views, on his real views, not the ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, Klan member BS that they make about him. I would love to see that. That's all. And I'll drop down and let someone else get up here.
Yeah, and
thanks, buddy. Good. That's a good idea, actually, Dave.
Yeah, I think
that's Dave, fine. That's a good idea. We should do that.
That's a great idea. We also need to do a documentary on the lies of black KKK Klansmen, because it just shows how these Jews lie. The Jewish scriptwriters for this movie made everything up. There was no bomb. There were no arrests. There was no black woman civil rights leader who was going to be killed by the Klan in Colorado Springs. It was all a lie. The only plot to kill anybody.
Of course, they make everything up. Their lips move, they're lying. Right.
According to the author of the book the movie was made, according to him, the only plot, because he infiltrated the Progressive Labor Party, the only plot was against me, to kill me. So let's go to the Jewish Encyclopedia. Let me give you a couple quotes out of there and to talk about what I'm saying here, because I wanted to back this up for people, and this is powerful material. Okay, so I told you about Gentiles, right? So here it is. Here's some of the quotes directly out of the Jewish Encyclopedia. Okay, so in the article Gentiles, it makes very clear that the Talmud's clear hatred toward non-Jews is undeniable. It says, quote, under the subtitle Discrimination Against Gentiles on pages 617, 621, it clearly shows the Talmud's attitude toward non-Jews. Now, here's some of the excerpts. So this is just a few sentences, but it's important. And this is right out of the Jewish Encyclopedia. They held, this is the Talmud, this is the chief, you know, religious and guidebook of the Jews. In fact, it's much more important than the Torah. The Torah is only the first five books of the Old Testament, or which they base their stuff on. But the real laws and everything are what they study in the yeshivas around the clock for years. That's what they do, is the Talmud. So anyway, here's what it says. They held, this is the people writing the Talmud, the Jews in the Talmud, that only Jews are men. Gentiles they class not as men, but as barbarians, and then they even quote from the Talmudic verses, Baba Mezi, I think that's 108b. Another reason for the discrimination was the vile and vicious character of Gentiles. Talk about hate speech. Whose flesh is like the flesh of asses, and whose issue, in other words, his children, are like the issue of horses. The Gentiles were so strongly suspect of unnatural crimes that it was necessary to prohibit the stabling of a cow in their stalls. That's from Abba Zohar, and they give you the verses. The Torah outlawed the issue of a Gentile, outlawed our children, the very issue of a Gentile, as that of a beast. The Almighty offered the Torah to the Gentile nations, but since they refused to accept it, he withdrew is shining legal protections from them and transferred their property rights to Israel. Sounds like the Palestinians, right? And everything else in terms of all their crimes and criminal economic crimes in the world, right? The presumption is that the Gentile obtained possessions illegally. The property is considered public property, like unclaimed land of the desert. That's right out of the Talmud. It also says the best of the Christians, or the best of the Gentiles, excuse me, should be killed. I mean, it's just, you just can't even imagine this kind of religious hatred. Judaism is the most racist, supremacist, vile religion. I'll give you a few quotes out of the Talmud, too. Now, I'm real careful. What I did is when I wrote My Awakening, I went through every quote, because sometimes you read, there's a lot of books out that talk quotes from the Talmud. Most of them are pretty accurate, very accurate. Some of them sometimes are not, or sometimes the different sections of the Talmud weren't some of the primary sections. So I made sure that every single quote that I used in my book was documented. I even show where it is in the Talmud. And I checked it out personally. I actually took translations online from Jewish websites and went right to the Talmud to verify it, right? Here's some of their wonderful writings. It's the most racist, hateful writings you'll ever read. Quote, only Jews are human. Gentiles are animals. Baba Mezia 114a, that's near the other quote. For murder, whether of a Cuthian, Gentile, by a Cuthian, or by an Israelite, by a Cuthian, punishment is incurred. But of a Cuthian, by an Israelite, there's no death penalty. Quote, even the best of Gentiles should be killed. That's Abadora Zara 26H. And by the way, they explain it in the Jewish Encyclopedia as saying just as the best of snakes must have their heads crushed. Listen to this stuff. I mean, in fact, they even talk about doing evil to Gentiles, but they got to be careful so Gentiles don't find out, so the Jews don't suffer for it. So they got to do it in deceit. Here it is. If a Jew is tempted to do evil, it's no wrong. They're not saying you shouldn't do evil against Gentiles. He should go to a city where he's not known and do the evil there so the Gentiles don't find out. Here's one. Gentile flesh is like the flesh of asses, and whose issue is like that of the issue of horses. If a heathen, Gentile, hits a Jew, the Gentile must be killed. And you know why it says a Gentile must be killed? Because hitting a Jew, right, is like hitting God, or is hitting God, because they believe they are God. That's why they think they can get away with anything and do life and death over people. Here's another one. If an ox of an Israelite gores an ox of a Canaanite, there's no liability. If an ox of a Canaanite, Gentile, gores the ox of an Israelite, the payment must be made in full. Quote, if a Jew finds an object lost by a heathen, a Gentile, it does not have to be returned. Abba Mezia, and also affirmed in Baba Kamas 113. God will not spare a Jew who marries his daughter to an old man, or takes a wife for his infant son, or return a lost article to a Cuthian. God will not spare any Jew that returns a lost article to a Gentile. That's what I say, hate him. What a Jew obtains by theft from a Cuthian, Gentile, he may keep. That's Sanhedrin. Gentiles are outside the protection of the law, just like the Gaza people right now. Just like the Germans are outside the law. You know, we even outlawed poison gas in the First World War, saying we got to outlaw this because we don't want to even use it on the battlefield. Because it's so horrible. We have to have
Dave, more. Let's get to the calls and we'll come back to the evil writings of the Jew.
Quotes and we'll go forward. Okay. Because I just want to finish this one section so we finish it off. Gentiles are outside the protection of the law. Because Jews may use lies, subterfuge, to document, right? To circumvent, excuse me, a Gentile, Baba Kamma. All Gentile children are animals. They also call Gentile little girls as shiksa, which literally means, I got this from the Jewish Chronicle, which actually means whore, literally, whore, harlot. And little Gentile girls are called selba, which means little whores. This is the common word used by Jews, and every Jew knows what that means. I once talked about that, how on Seinfeld they used it. They just didn't tell us really what it actually meant. They said it just means, Gentile woman. It does, but it means a whore. I mean, this is hate, and this is the ultimate supremacism and racial hate and violence that you could possibly imagine. And of course, we're not even gotten into in these quotes and everything, the incredible stories about how Jews can enslave Gentiles and keep them as slaves forever. It talks in the Talmud about how every Jew
We'll all right, Dave, we'll get back to that. Let's get to the calls.
Okay.
All right, we'll get back to it. Okay, we've got our good friend Henry from Estonia. Henry, the floor is yours, buddy. Go ahead, Hank.
I'm good. My question is, what's your version of how Jews started World War One?
Okay, there's a lot to it, but it's pretty simple. When it lined up to be Germany, all right, Britain and France against Germany and the Axis countries, like Germany, Turkey, some of Eastern Europe, the Habsburg Empire, to be against Britain, France, and Russia, the Jews wanted the war, but they didn't want to support Russia, because Jews wanted to overthrow Russia with communism, right? But they knew that if there was a war between Germany and Russia, and they believed that it was right because the Allies were definitely going to take most attention in Belgium and France and Britain, they knew that the Germans had a great advantage and that they would probably defeat the Tsar. Now, Jews like Jacob Schiff, who was one of the biggest capitalist bankers in the world, who was actually the biggest financier of the Communist Party globally, used to give hundreds of millions of dollars to Trotsky and these Jews and Lenin and the rest of these Jews. And he was a big Zionist as well. But when they did this, he also writes in his own memoirs, he writes in his own Jewish communal register in New York, which I've dug out, I've documented. He also writes that he said, we've got to keep Russia from the money markets. This was way back during the Russo-Japanese War, 1905. So they wanted Russia to have huge casualties, to suffer terrible defeat at the hands of Germany. Okay. And so they wanted that. But at the same time, they did everything they could not to support Russia, because they wanted Russia to suffer defeat so Christian Russia would lose. But at the same time, they had a lot of financial interests. The Rothschilds had more money invested in the loans going out to France and Belgium and Great Britain and so forth than it did for them. Then during the war, the Germans won. And finally, the Russians sued for peace in the Brest-Litovsk Treaty. And when that happened, the German army was going to be doubled inside because we had the Eastern Front and the Western Front, as you're very well being in Estonia, which is an Eastern European country. And that freed up the German army. So the Germans were a real advantage for the end of the war because their manpower was increased, all their weaponry, their munitions and everything be vastly increased. So they got what they wanted in terms of defeating Russia, making the way for communism. At the same time, the Jews saw an opportunity to get the Jewish state. They wanted a center for their Zionist global power and control. They wanted a nation where they could plot all they wanted, where they could run away when they commit terrorism. For instance, they were a communist, something they wanted some country, some area they could go to that they would control eventually in their effort to control the world. Ben Gurion, by the way, in the 1960s, in fact, I got a copy out of Look magazine, they asked a number of world leaders, including Ben Gurion of Israel, who was the first head, the prime minister of Israel, and they asked him what his vision for the future was. And he said, my prophecy for the future is that Israel, that there would be a truly United Nations. And by the way, there was a United Nations form, but a truly United Nations, he said, where all armies would be abolished and its headquarters would be in Jerusalem in Israel, where the United Nations would build a shrine to the Jewish prophets. And he said, all laws and all rules will emanate from Israel. And I mean, you can't make this up, and because that's what they wanted. So the First World War, they were in favor of this. And then what they did was they got Great Britain to do the Balfour Declaration. Now, ironically, the Balfour Declaration, I'll show you how they do things in so deceptive ways. Balfour himself And they convinced these Jews, they're clever. It doesn't take rocket science to just, you know, to subvert people, though, to make them assets. You don't have to be a rocket science to get somebody hooked up with some nasty woman, blackmail them about their marriage, or blackmailing them because of their homosexual evil ways. What they can do is they know how to do these basic things. And so they Balfour himself was this Jew, was the former minister, or the foreign minister of Great Britain. And Balfour didn't like Jews. And so the Jews and Jewish influence acted like, oh, great, we're going to solve your Jewish question. They did the same thing. They approached the same thing to Hitler. The Germans realized it, though, over time. They realized it wasn't right to the Palestinians. And so Hitler and the Germans stopped supporting the whole agreements for Jews to go from Germany to Palestine. They did it first because they didn't understand it well, and they were deceived. But the British definitely were deceived, and Balfour thought. So they even tried to enlist Gentiles to support this as a way to get the Jews out of their country. They did say in the Balfour Declaration that they had to respect the civil rights of the Gentiles, but they should have known that the Jews were not going to respect the civil rights of the Palestinians in that country. The Balfour Declaration, in fact, demands that. But the Balfour Declaration itself was drafted and controlled by Jews. In fact, the guy that actually wrote the Declaration, I found this in the Jewish virtual learning, which is, you can get it on the internet. He's one of the biggest Jewish archive sites in the world. And there's a big article saying that the man who wrote the Balfour Declaration was a secret Jew. His name was Armory.
Do we know who he was?
Yes, his name was Armory. We got his name, everything. He pretended to be British, of complete British descent. He was actually a Jew. In fact, he even went and fought in some of the Jewish terrorist organizations in Palestine. Believe it or not, that's the guy who wrote the Balfour Declaration while he was pretending to be British. I mean, so that's the, and so we had the Balfour Declaration out of it. And ironically, like, everything about Israel is a lie. You know, like they say, oh, those Hamas and those Palestinians are all terrorists. One of the biggest terrorist acts in the history of the world at that time took place in Palestine by the Jewish Irgun, where they blew up the King David Hotel. And even though the British actually made this agreement with them and let them settle, which they shouldn't have. And by the way, from all my liberal friends who support massive immigration into Europe, remember, all you leftists, that the Palestinian people opposed the massive immigrations of Jews into Palestine. They saw the writing on the wall. They knew what was going to happen. And Americans opposed the massive immigration of Jews. That's why we had the Restrictions Immigration Act. But by 1924, organizations like the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which Mayorkas was one of the directors of, had already, you know, brought tens of millions of Jews. And it was the Jewish invasion of America, the Jewish, quote, refugees of America, which were brought in by these Jewish organizations and Jewish power and money. If they came in and they flooded America in the 1880s and 1890s, they rose to huge economic power. They were in the banking institutions. They were in media. They took over the New York Times, for instance. Washington Post was taken over in the 1930s. They took all this stuff over, and they started controlling America. They took over the early radio networks, and they took over the TV networks. And if not for this Jewish invasion of America, there couldn't have been a Jewish invasion and mass murder and ethnic cleansing and terrorism and genocide in the Middle East. So any Palestinian who keeps talking about America or talks about Europeans are guilty and how this is nothing more than European colonialism, it's not European colonialism. It's Jewish genocide. And Jews had the same intentions for the European people, including the Estonian people, because when you were under the power, and I know you're Estonian, so I know you know the history. Thousands of Estonian Christians and others were tortured mercilessly by the Bolshevik, by these Bolshevik Jews. And history is very, very clear about that. And so the stuff that's going on in Palestine, the torture that's going on in Palestine. And by the way, they're being tortured in Israeli prisons. And the reason why all we hear about is 130 Jewish, quote, hostages, we don't hear about the fact that Israel added 5,000 hostages in prisons, Jewish prisons, even Jewish organizations, human rights organizations like B'Tselem say torture Palestinians. I mean, their own figures show that between 150 and 200,000 Palestinians have been tortured in Israeli dungeons and prisons. The Save the Children, the international organization you probably, most people probably heard of, Save the Children says that 40% of the kids, and there's been thousands taken by Israel, have been sexually molested and tortured in Israeli prisons. And by the way, the parents are the ones held hostage of children who are arrested for throwing a rock. They could be in jail for 30 years. The parents can't dare even talk about their child or expose what's happening to their child, because then they know, because there's no hope for them, because they can't reach them, they can't communicate with them. And they know that if they say anything and protest this, that these their kids are going to be even treated worse. I mean, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be terribly tortured. And it's these are the ones held hostage. And there's been 5,000. But you don't hear about the 5,000 additional. They have over 10,000 prisoners. Now, some sources are actually saying, international sources, by the way, not Palestinian sources, they say that they've added 9,000 prisoners in their entire imprisonment. And CNN, believe it or not, sometimes things kind of sneak through. CNN had a big article about how they built this huge facility out in the desert, very close to the borders of Gaza, where they're unbelievably torturing Palestinians. They're putting ties on their backs, like behind them, with these hard plastic ties, like for handcuffs. You cut off their circulation, and they end up having to amputate hundreds and hundreds of Palestinians' hands, arms, and legs by these restraints. And they make people, they put blindfolds on them for weeks. They don't feed them properly. They put a diaper, and they make them, you know, defecate on themselves in that kind of misery. They get infections and so forth, and don't treat. Instead, the way that you smell, in fact, some of the international people, including some of the media, and some of the people who got the, and Jewish whistleblowers, I got to give credit to some Jews who exposed this evil, right? Because they had a number of whistleblowers that worked in these facilities, a number of Jews who sacrificed their career, their future in Israel. They're going to be considered traitors. But they exposed all this stuff. And it was all in the CNN report. You can probably find it, but you have to really look for it. It's not going to be in your regular evening news in Estonia or in America or anywhere else. But, you know, the evil of what these people do, and what's going on in Gaza is nothing new. It's been going on. There's 64 different places in the Old Testament where they're celebrating the mass murder of every man, woman, child, and even the animals. I mean, that's the way. And I can show you places in there where they say, you know, you're filled with joy smashing the brains out of the children of your enemies. You're filled with joy doing that. That's sick. Now, I didn't understand all these things. Maybe I can say the translations were bad or something like that. I don't know. All I know is that is not the message by Jesus Christ. And there's no mass murders in the New Testament. The only mass murders in the New Testament are with the murder of Christ and the murder of Christians, and the mass murder of Christians, which is very...
All right, Dave, we got to get to the next call.
You got it. Thank you very much, my friend.
Henry, we'll get you back in, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Henry's the man.
That was a good segment.
Oh, yeah, very good. Catherine, what's your question or comment for the good doctor?
Well, I would like to talk about Ayo Kamathi. This last time that I heard him, and I didn't hear the whole show, and there's probably worse stuff I didn't hear, but basically he was talking about how whites should pay. All whites were guilty of slavery. All whites. And when I first went on the show, I complimented him. I was very nice to him. And I said, you know, my father and all four grandparents were from Germany. One family was from Austria.
Do you have a question for Dr. Duke? Catherine?
Just let me talk for a minute. And then he
said, goodbye, Catherine. Goodbye. Okay. Catherine called into.
I'll treat that as a question because
she called. No, well, let me tell you what happened. Well, she called into IO's show.
Don't waste any time. Let me go into the question.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, okay. Let's get on the point. We only have a certain amount of time. You're always saying that, and it's true. Okay.
Exactly.
So the truth is that if anybody should know about slavery, and anybody is responsible for the slave trade, which was the most evil part of slavery. It wasn't the conditions of slavery. I mean, you could say that serfs weren't held in that condition, or people that had low wages and are practically slave labor in all of these companies and businesses under capitalism. It was the slave trade, which is the most evil part of all. Now, in the first place, you don't have to much go further than the Torah, and you don't have to go any further than the Talmud, which says that every Jew will have the equivalent of 2,800 Gentile slaves. That's literally what they say. I'm not making it up. But as far as slavery in general, quote, this is, okay, let me get this for you. I want to make sure I get the exact, here it is. There it is. Let me see here. Okay. So this is from Leviticus, and it's Leviticus 25 through 44. Okay. So anyway, let me go back to the quote, if I can get it back. That's frustrating. Okay. So let me get the quote back again. All right. So, man, it's always something. All I did was click on my footnote in my print, my copy.
Now, what are you looking for, Dave?
I was looking for the quote from Leviticus. Here is a slave trade. As for your male and female slaves among you, you may buy male and female slaves from among the nations that are around you. And it goes on in verse 46, you may bequeath them, these slaves, to your sons after you to inherit as a possession forever. You may make slaves of them, but over your brethren, you can't do that. So, you know, over the brethren of the people of Israel, you shall not rule over one another with harshness. But you can definitely rule over harshness with Gentiles. And as I've told people a lot on this show and many other programs, Jacob Marcus was commissioned by the Encyclopedia Britannica back in the 50s to do the history of the Jews. And in his history, he said specifically that Jews controlled the commerce of Europe during the Middle Ages, especially the slave trade, right? And they also, in America, documented the most murderous slave trade in history, in terms of black people. There was a lot of murder going on with white people, too, because Jewish were commissioning these corsairs to go get Gentile slaves, mainly women and children, because they were the most valuable. They could have a whole lifetime of slavery to these Jews. But anyway, so here's what, in a book I read called Who Brought the Slaves to America, I began to realize, I started looking up the aspects. Michael Raphael was a Jew who wrote a book called The Jews and Judaism in the United States, a Documentary History. Let me give you a couple of quotes. Jewish merchants played a major role in the slave trade. In fact, in all the American colonies, whether French, Martinique, British, Dutch, Jewish merchants dominated. There's no less true than the North American mainland, where among the 18th century, Jews participated in the triangular trade that brought slaves from Africa to the West Indies. They exchanged them for molasses, which in turn took it to New England, you know, for the rum and so forth, and then sold the slaves for profit. Wow, that's some stuff, right? And it talks about Isaac da Costa of Charleston was one of the biggest. And it talks about David Franks of Philadelphia, Aaron Lopez of Newport, Rhode Island. And by the way, Newport, Rhode Island, and New Haven, Connecticut were the centers of this slave trade. Now, to show you how the Jewish media, again, paints everything in a fake way, you can still see this movie. I don't know if you want to watch it. Just look at a movie called Amistad. And Amistad was made by Steven Spielberg, also gave us the movies about the Holocaust and so forth, right? And by the way, before I do that quote from you know, and the facts of the movie. Here's another thing from a Jewish history, and it says in 1820, over 75% of all Jewish families in Charleston, Richmond, Savannah owned slaves. And they talk about this, that over 40% of all Jewish households in the United States owned slaves. Only 1%, 1.5% nationwide, 2% maybe in the South, 1% nationwide, only 1% of Gentile households owned slaves. Now, Steven Spielberg, in his book Amistad, you know, when I learned about this role, I'll just give you a little reference here. When I learned about the Jewish role in the slave trade, it seemed to me that it certainly added resentment in my heart against the Jews. And it felt resentment against Jews. It felt by their host populations, because slavery has never really been considered a very moral or a very good occupation, even in the old days. Being known as the greatest perpetrators of the slave trade is not the best public relations for Jews, obviously. It's no wonder the Jewish-dominated media has completely avoided the issue and turned the issue around. Only Jewish scholars who faithfully record Jewish history, primarily for Jewish readers, are allowed to travel to such forbidden historical issues, right? So I did efforts in the 1970s. I appeared on a PBS program called Black Perspectives of the News with the most famous black talk show. It was the first one in America. And it stimulated the Nation of Islam, actually, Farrakhan, to begin extensive research on it. And they used my data, and they used that, and I even sent them a lot of stuff. And they wrote books, and they documented all this in the secret relationship of Jews, with hundreds and hundreds of footnotes of the Jews where Jewish writings promoted this, right? Now, in Spielberg's blockbuster movie, praised by the media, Amistad, there was hardly a Jew to be found in the film. Although the Jews dominated the Newport, Rhode Island slave trade, all the slaves...
Which is why he made the film.
Right.
All
the slaves in the film seemed conspicuously, the slavers, were conspicuously Christian. In fact, they show them very prominently in the film, torturing and beating these blacks with Christian crosses hanging around their neck. But these were Jews, by the way, not Christians.
Right, of course.
Now, because of my work and because of that of the Nation of Islam, in discussing Amistad and this Jewish-dominated slave trade, Time and Newsweek, under their control, went out of their way to deny a major Jewish role in slave trade.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, their readers were not told that prominent Jewish historians themselves wrote about and boasted about their control of the slave trade. And, very few people will ever read the words that I quote in my book, you know, that says, quote, this is from the American Jewish Historical Society, quote, Jewish merchants played a major role in the slave trade. And just what I quoted earlier. So this is the reality, and this may be the reason why there's something called anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is nowadays defined as what? It was defined as opposing Jewish genocide against the Gazans. And I think that's what anti-Semitism is. Anti-Semitism is opposed to the Jewish criminal roles in the slave trade, in white slavery,
Dave, in reference to what Catherine was trying to say, was that Io believes whites are responsible, and so you just proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that it wasn't the whites, it was the Jews. Yeah. So I think that answers her question. Right. Let's get the next person in.
And by the way, not only is slavery, okay, one more thing I'd like to add, because I think I'll punctuate it, is it's not only the slave trade. In many ways, a pornography racket is just part of white slavery. They get these young girls, they get them hooked on drugs so they'll do anything. They degrade them, they beat them, they hurt them, they destroy their lives. By the time that a year in that kind of adult film industry, they're committing suicide, they're on dope, you know, their lives are destroyed, right? And pornography itself destroys people. And as I've quoted so often, there's a Jew by the name of Nathan Abrams who did a big story for the Jewish Intellectual Quarterly. I just want to give a quick quote and we'll go to the next call. All right. Al Goldstein, one of the leading pornographers, Jewish pornographer, publisher of Screw magazine, said the only reason, this is quote, directly from him by a Jewish chronicler of this, a Jewish scholar in Jewish International Quarterly. The only reason that Jews are in pornography is that we think Christ sucks. I hate to say these words. Catholicism sucks. We don't believe in authoritarianism. Pornography thus becomes a way of defiling Christian culture as it penetrates the very heart of the American mainstream and is no doubt consumed by those very same whites. Its subversive character becomes more charged. Extending the subversive thesis, all right, this is words of Nathan Abrams, Jewish involvement in the X-rated industry can be seen as a proverbial two fingers to the entire WASP and Gentile establishment. Jewish involvement in porn by this argument is a result of an atavistic hatred of Christian authority. They're trying to weaken the dominant culture in America by moral subversion. He talks about Astor was a porn.
And they did.
And it says Astor remembers having to run or fight for it as in grammar school because he was a Jew. It could very well be that part of the porn career up yours to the people. So, here's literally a Jew documented the Jewish domination of porn, right? And documented right. Destruction of American morals specifically because they hate Christians and because they're trying to subvert and weaken the American family and the American people. You can't, this kind of evil you can't make up. The people I've ever met.
You can cover it up with the right. Jews media, but you right. can't make it up.
Dave. One last comment to you because this is a very important point. Okay. Here's the deal. I've met a lot of people like yourself and many others and myself who are very upset with Jews for what they've done. But I've never met a single person in my movement that would ever suggest, the way we're going to get at Jews is we're going to get their kids in pornography. We're going to get their kids in drugs. We're going to, kill their children, destroy their lives. We're going to degrade them. And we're going to give them porn. And the funny thing is that the state of Israel, which has massive porn kings living there and also supporting porn all over the world, makes it very hard for Jews to go to porn sites because they have to register publicly to do it because they don't right. want Jewish young people doing it. Yet they,
of course.
But it's like I didn't write these things about how Jews want to subvert us with pornography. But if you just imagine and think about the depth of evil of these people trying to destroy
the depravity of the Jew, the depravity of the Jew mind.
Our children, get our daughters into porn, into pornography, and making films where they're degraded, urinated on, all sorts of other things they do. It's horrible.
Right. They're obviously they're sick. Dave, before we get to the next call, so in reference to Catherine's bringing up how she called up I.O. Show and he blames all whites for, he obviously doesn't know his history, right? Do you have something to say to him about his statement that
I'm not really recognizing and identifying who he is.
That's a black guy you were going to have that, meeting with. We're going to do it online and
debate with you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand why I would say he doesn't really know, but he's written a lot about Jews. And I would like to educate him on that story. And I'm not saying that whites have never committed any crimes or exploitation of blacks or anything like that. And I can tell you a lot of whites were enslaved by blacks, like the Corsairs from North Africa who raided the coast and took white families and children and raped the heck out of them and hurt them and did so on forth. And I think the morality of the Christian whites that had slavery, that rape was a much less common thing than what existed in some of these colonies. And among, we've seen the sexual behavior of blacks. A good example is the fact that the actual Department of Justice list crimes often by race. They did it for 25 years. And for 25 years, there was anywhere between 20 and 35 to 40,000 white women every year raped by black males. And basically zero. Basically, they have zero with an asterisk or 10 with an asterisk. Because
right, 10 or less, but, yeah, but they don't give you the number.
So there was no, you know, so, I mean, you know, if you want to talk about violence and any sort of violence against anybody is wrong, and I would condemn any white person to do it. And I think that most white Christians, most white people, I'm not saying there are not some bad people out there. I think most white people would absolutely condemn that. In fact, any white person that had sexual relations at all in any way with a black slave woman was absolutely, you know, condemned and would be running out of society. They wouldn't be welcome at any, you know, at any party. They wouldn't be welcome in any distinguished meeting at all. In fact, I remember when they said some of the politics in the early America were really rough, right? And so the Thomas Jefferson, because once some of his political opponents was saying, because one of the house slaves of Jefferson,
Sally Hemings.
Yeah, Sally Hemings was given a gift of a dress when he came back from, just to be nice to her. She was a house slave and she did housekeeping and everything was nice to her. There was no evidence whatsoever that he fathered any of their children, and the DNA does not prove that. It looks like one of Jefferson's nephews or relatives did it, because there's no proof whatsoever that did it. And Jefferson was so incensed by this. He said, it's just because it was like the worst thing you could say about someone. Now, no black that has, you know, that gets a white hoe on his arm, right? Or a white, you know, this is going to be condemned by blacks, right? Or really condemned as though that's an evil thing to do. And that's disgusting. In fact, it'd just be a badge of honor, right? And most of the black sports guys, they love to get a beautiful white girl on their arm. So, I mean,
right. and some murder them.
And murder them.
Like OJ.
And beat them and everything else.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Dave, let's get to the calls because they're okay. Coming down to, we got our good friend from Yuma, Arizona, Robert, who works outside. Now, you still working outside? Yeah, good.
Excellent. No, I'm not.
Dr. Duke, you're not? Okay.
Dr. Duke, do you think that domestic policies or social policies can affect the spiritual fruit of a society?
Well, obviously, domestic policies can certainly do that in many, many, many ways. I mean, even just the legalization of porn, because porn was never viewed in the prospect of free speech. It was degenerate, it was evil, and it was a criminal act was being performed because it's basically sex for money. Because prostitution has been illegal in most societies, and certainly in the United States and most countries. And by the way, Jews dominated that bit of vice. Okay. So the fact that porn was argued by Jews, and the power that they did legally in the courts, and the power they spent defending them and affecting the media saying, oh, we got to have porn to be legal, was certainly a very destructive thing for America. I remember a time when not even Playboy magazine would ever show, you know, a woman even in the, you know, with the pubic area exposed. I mean, it was just really a different kind of world. I remember when that was a crime. I remember people put in jail. Now we have the most disgusting thing, which has got to be harmful and traumatic for any young kid to look at. I mean, you've even got a lot of porn is abusive. A lot of porn is homosexual porn. People couldn't even imagine that when I grew up, to have homosexual porn. It's disgusting. And no kid should see that. No young boy, no young girl should see that crap. And but when you have that to be legal, it's one thing. I mean, what people do in the privacy of their bedroom, they do, right? And you can't really, I'm not for putting the camera in everybody's bedroom. I'm not for government snooping into everything. But I certainly am opposed to mass distribution and promotion of homosexuality or And that, in fact, law, Russia moved with a law on that, by the way, which I understand that law, are certainly showing disgusting, vile, anal activities, you know, and so forth with homosexuals, which kids could see, which can certainly screw them up. And because one thing I know is that when a kid is awakening sexually, boy or girl, and they have the first times in their life when they wake up to sexual feelings and sexual excitement and so forth, the images they see could have an impact on what is exciting to them for the rest of their life. And if it's a perverted image, and I think that that's one of the reasons why that we have so much more homosexuality now than years ago, because this is being programmed into our kids. This is not something that's natural.
They're even calling it hateful if you don't encourage the self-destruction behavior of homosexuals, or the unnatural behavior of homosexuals. They're saying it's hateful.
You know, by the way, Israel's been so much in the news, I thought one of the things that I'd say a little bit, take a couple minutes on here and there on the show tonight, was some of the statements about Israel that I found really interesting, you know? So I want to give you a couple real quick.
Dave, we got to get to the calls. We'll come back to that. Hold it. Thanks, Robert. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Well, I'll give you one quote, and then I'll wait.
Dave, we're backed up.
It's only a sentence, Dave.
All right, one sentence. Go ahead.
It's a great quote. This is President Harry Truman under pressure to recognize the newly announced Zionist state of Israel. Jesus Christ couldn't please them when he was here on earth. So how could anyone expect
Yeah.
I have any.
Right. I love that one.
Okay.
That is great. Our buddy Nick has a simple yes or no question. Then we're going to get to Richard and beyond. We might bring Catherine in if she can behave. Go ahead. Go ahead, Nick.
Let me preface by wishing both of y'all a blessed Pentecost, the birth of the church, particularly okay. You, Dr. Duke.
Great.
Question is, have you ever spoken with Max Blumenthal about the Jewish?
I don't think I've ever spoken with him. I would like to. I'd like to have a discussion with him. I think we have some disagreements, but I think overall, I think he's done some good things in exposing the crimes of Israel and exposing Jewish supremacy and supremacism, which he's adopting a lot of my terms, just like B'Tselem and some of the other organizations like Genocide Watch and other human rights organizations.
It only took him 60 years.
How about Dr. Norman Finkelstein?
Well, Finkelstein's really impressive to me, even though he's a Bolshevik. I mean, he's a communist, and he's unapologetic, yes. You know, communism when he was a young kid. But he really understands how insane these Jews are. He says these Jews who run Israel are total lunatics, and they're the greatest threat in the world to our survival. And I think they are. And the chance of nuclear war right now is greater than it ever was. Now, one of the things I got to be thankful for Finkelstein was, I read his book when it first came out many years ago. And boy, that was so long ago. But it was called The
Holocaust Industry.
Yes. And it was all about how Jews were fraudulently blackmailing Switzerland, which they were alleging that Switzerland had all these accounts of Jews and so forth, you know, improperly. And if they didn't go along and pay these billions of dollars, that then they would, you know, blacken them, because they had the power to do so in the media, and say that the Swiss were colluding with the Nazis, which they weren't. Well, he you know, this guy, really, Finkelstein, he literally proved, and he showed that it was a big shakedown. It was a big lie that Jews were stealing. And he made a very amazing quote in that book and about that book on some of the media that I saw him on. And he said that there's so many frauds in connection with the Holocaust, so many lies and so many lying stories which are told as true stories. He said millions of people could be forgiven to thinking, you know, that the Holocaust itself is a lie, even though he doesn't say it's a lie. He says the Jews were killed. He doesn't argue with that, but he knows if he did argue with that, he wouldn't sell one book, and he would be totally silent, just like I am. But I don't even say that, and I've been silenced. It's just for arguing freedom of speech. But that's a pretty amazing statement. He said there's so much fraud in connection with the Holocaust that people can be forgiven for thinking that the Holocaust itself is fraudulent. And that's interesting.
Right. Thanks, Nick. We'll get you back in, buddy. Okay, we're going in the lightning round.
He didn't agree with that. He just said that you can understand.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, Richard, go ahead, buddy. Lightning round.
Hello. Well, I've got a very quick question for David Duke. There's a scandal happening now in the UK regarding contaminated blood, tainted blood. As we were on the topic of discussing disgusting fags earlier, I wanted to know what the law is in regards to the UK, the US, in relation to, I guess, homosexuals giving blood and then that potentially going into, the blood of those needing it. Where's the stance on that in terms of US law, UK law? And should they be allowed to do that? That's my question.
I've given blood regularly. I think that actually giving blood is a real healthy thing to do because always in nature, historically and anthropologically, we always had times we lost blood. We cut our feet, we didn't even have shoes for many hundreds of thousands of years. I mean, and insects and parasites and everything else. And there's a way to get out some of the toxic stuff out of our blood, and you can give blood. And when I used to give blood, they do ask you if you've had any homosexual relations, right? Which I'm very happy to say that I can answer, of course not. But so they used to do that, but they're dropping those requirements more and more. What they're doing is they're asking sometimes people who are having those relations to have tests. The problem is that those tests are not always going to show up as somebody's homosexually positive with AIDS. So you can have different aspects of the disease. You might have like the COVID thing or any flu. You might have a flu and not kind of show up unless you did tests for it. And if you don't do tests for it, then you're opening yourself up to disaster. And there's been certainly thousands, if not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that have got blood transfusion for no fault of their own. They weren't homosexual. They weren't doing drugs. They weren't doing dirty needles or anything like that. They had blood transfusions, and they end up coming down and having a horrible death from AIDS. And this is one more example of the insanity we have in our society.
And now we got to worry about that fake vaccine as well with the blood transfusions and all that. Thanks, Richard. We'll get you back in, buddy. Dave, Richard asked, are we going to have the after show?
I'm not going to have one tonight. In fact, I'm having little stomach issues right now, so I'm going to bail out tonight. But I did enjoy a little bit last week and before we had some, but I've just got to get my stuff done here.
How dare you?
How dare me?
Okay, let's see. That's it. Catherine, do you have a quick question for the lightning round?
Well, you didn't let me finish what I was saying.
Well, you're continuing.
Catherine.
No,
quick question for the... Catherine, I'm going to take you out again. Important. Just ask a quick question.
Okay.
That's it.
It's a statement.
Okay. Oh, no.
Well, make a short
statement. Okay, so you got a comment.
Okay, so not only was he saying that all whites were guilty... He didn't talk about the Jews doing the slave trade. I had to tell him about Jews doing the slave trade and Jews owning most of the slaves.
I thought he knew all that.
And even blacks owning slaves. But
Dave,
then he went on to say, let me finish. Then he went on to say that it was common for white males to have their sexual initiation with a black woman.
That's totally untrue.
Do you see how this
I understand, though, why he might believe that. And a lot of these people, even though he understands the duplicity and the lies of Jews, if you read something again and again in your life and you see it in the media and in movies, it becomes true for a lot of people.
And
blacks have a chip on their shoulders because they've been weaponized every day of their lives. They've been told how white people have hurt them and abused them and so forth. So, I understand that. But there's no excuse for that. And I would love to talk to him and probably try to get him straight on that.
He's a piece of crap. He's a piece of crap.
I don't think he's a piece of crap. He just says, look, there's a lot of white people that are misinformed. What we have to do is educate him and change his opinion.
He put me on hold where I couldn't talk. And I was trying to tell him most white people came here way after the time of the slave trade and have nothing whatsoever to do with it. Yet he said that blacks should get reparations.
Let me tell you something. The idea that people would have the first introduction of their young man with a black slave girl, a black woman, is absolutely nothing but the worst of calumny.
You know, it seems like he's just saying
any European, any white person, any white Christian would be absolutely horrified with that kind of thing. They would be disgusted by it, and they would never want their son or their daughter to have that kind of experience. It's ridiculous.
All right, Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine. But I understand.
Catherine's gone.
That because that's what happens. That's what the Jews do. That one of the reasons why they wanted to change the demographics of the country and lessen the white majority, because at the same time they've been weaponizing minorities against us again and again and again and again. You know, in fact, it's not white colonialism that's committed these greatest crimes, even in many, like, for instance, the slavery system. They controlled slavery and the slave trade all the way from Africa into all of the Americas. They ran it. They would close the slave auction.
Dave, let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm going to be on rentsradio.com, and you can get my archive at HR. Human Rights, HR Radio, R-A-D-I-O, HRRADIO.net. And you can also find me on Gab at Real David Duke. And you can also find me Odyssey with my classic videos there. And you ought to take a listen if you haven't listened to it yet, my debate with Alex Jones. That's a classic. So I'll see y'all later. And thank you so much for everything.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Thank you, Dave. Feel better. Hope your stomach gets better. Yeah. And we'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening. Thank you all the callers for coming in. Always a great time. And
don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.